29th of February 2016, Property Chat with Kit Myrie and Ken Hume from James Alexander. Quite a lot to get through this week, a lot of property news, Kit.
Yes, I believe the first point we're coming on to is the European exit.
Indeed, yeah, the exit from Europe. Don't want to get boring about this because we know you're hearing a lot about it on the TV. We want to talk about it from a property perspective and the different arguments that are coming up. Many people are saying that if we come away from the EU, that could have a negative and positive effect, and we're just looking at the various arguments for that. One of the arguments is that we'll have less bricklayers because at the moment we have a massive shortage of bricklayers, and that's holding up building in the UK, and that if we come out of the EU we'll have even less. That will slow down building and therefore we won't be able to quench demand. So, you know, that's a good argument why it may not depress property prices, in fact.
Yeah, and that can also be countered with an argument that I read in the Times earlier today about the lack of employment that will be generated, well, speculatively generated by us leaving the EU, and that is that if there were lack of EU employees in London or in the UK, that would lead to an increase in demand, which would obviously lead to a decrease in house prices, which would obviously be adverse to what Ken was just saying.
I think that's true, but we have to bear in mind that we've got 20 buyers for every house
at the moment. Yeah.
If that halved, we'd still have more buyers than we have sellers, and therefore it's unlikely that we'd see a significant price drop. The one thing that could have an effect, though, is confidence. I always say that when us Brits are not sure about something, and the typical example of that was the Scottish vote, when everybody wasn't sure whether Scotland were coming away from us or not, the property prices then took a little bit of a... They just stayed still for a long while, and then the moment that the decision was for them to stay in, immediately the market started to get really busy again. And, you know, we could see a period of procrastination with this.
Yes, definitely. And that brings us on to our next point, which is Clause 24. Ken, I believe you've got a bit of an update and a new phrase you've coined almost, or has been coined.
We're calling it George's tenant tax now. Clause 24, this is the one where landlords are not allowed to claim interest payments. By 2020, 80% of the interest payments you claim against tax will not be allowable, and you'll only be allowed 20% of those interest payments against tax. This, for many landlords, will really move the goalposts and make it much, much harder to make a profit from buy-to-let. Now, landlords will have two choices on this. They'll either have to increase the rents or sell in order to stay profitable and liquid in terms of the market. Now, if you think about it, if they sell, there's going to be less supply. If there's less supply, rents will rise. If they don't sell, they only have one option, and that's to increase rents. Either way, rents go up. And because of the level of these increased taxes, it's likely that these rent increases will be meteoric, given that some landlords are already selling. So, you know, the supply of new property for tenants is going down, demand from tenants is going up, and, you know, George Osborne has really put the nail in the coffin here that there's only one way for rents, and that's rocketing upwards. So I hope that Cherie Blair and Omnia manage to put this challenge together successfully. However, I have to say, you know, they're doing that on the basis of Human Rights Act and that it's an unfair tax. I think it is an unfair tax, but there are lots of unfair taxes on individuals that companies get away with. So I'm not sure how successful they'll be, but good luck to them. But in the meantime, we see property prices, property rents particularly, jumping substantially in the next few years.
And that is kind of followed on from a side note in the Evening Standard here, where they've called London the rental city, and that is because they've compared it with Amsterdam, Berlin, Brussels and Paris, where they say 60% of people privately rent their property. And whereas in London in 2000 that was 40%, it's predicted by 2025 that that will be the same case.
Yeah, and that's not surprising given what we're talking about.
Exactly.
So it's really interesting. Now, on to mortgages.
Yes, so a headline that kind of caught my eye most recently was more Londoners going for the £500,000 price bracket. Now, in the last quarter of 2015, a record of 18% of first-time buyers went for that 500-plus price bracket, which can be followed on nicely by your point on mortgages, I believe.
Yes, absolutely. A couple of points on mortgages. One of the things is that, you know, we often think, well, how can prices keep going up? Because actually, people only have a finite salary. Salaries have to take account of how far people can go. And of course, that's true, but the way around the problem is to extend the mortgage term. And many young people now are taking mortgages for much, much longer. We're talking about 35-year terms now, which may seem quite shocking. But of course, what it does is makes repayments much more affordable. And this is important for young people. So it's important that the option is there. But it's also quite shocking to think of a 35-year commitment now.
Yeah,
you know, before you know it, we'll be talking about generational mortgages where you know, you pass your mortgage down to your children. God forbid. But on from that also, there are a lot of headlines recently about how 40-plus-year-olds are being turned down for mortgages. We have a headline here which says that 17% of people between the age of 40 and 45 said they were rejected by lenders because of their age. That's interesting. I've spoken to our mortgage broker this morning. We've got an IFA that we use, and we're speaking to her at some length about it. She said it's not her experience, actually.
Okay.
It's her experience that people, it's about the financial circumstances, which are quite stringent, but if you get through them, if you're 40 plus, it's still okay. And in fact, she was saying today that some lenders will extend mortgages up to 70s and 80s even. So maybe age isn't so much of a problem, although it seems to be a bit of a headline around at the moment.
Yeah, because that does follow on from a recent headline where it said mortgage approvals are at a two-year high. So, I mean, that would kind of follow on nicely from your point that maybe it's more of the financial pressures on mortgagees and less upon age, obviously. As we all get older, the working age is going to increase, and maybe that's why they'll be more inclined to lend for later ages.
I think that's right, and you have to bear in mind that, you know, nearly 50% of first-time buyers now taking out loans more than 25 years. 50%, that's quite a lot.
Yeah.
And then the average age of a first-time buyer is 33.
Yeah.
It's not young people anymore, really, because it's such a struggle to, you know, just get to that first hurdle. And I think these longer mortgages, on the one hand, are a bit of a saviour in the sense of at least it allows people to get in.
Yeah, definitely. I think that more or less wraps it up for our news for this week. We did get quite good reception on the ebook last week.
Yes, thank you for all your feedback on the ebook. Glad you enjoyed it. We will be doing some more freebies, giveaways and things as the weeks go on. And we hope you enjoyed this version of Property Chat this week. And we'll be back next week with another edition. Thanks for listening and watching.
Thank you.